Ladies and gentlemen, I got so involved talking to other people that I forgot how genuinely annoyed I am with everything. So, fucking ta-da, here I am. This is just me today. Feels fucking good. Although, I don't know, Dave Collum might call up just to interrupt me. And I mean that with a lot of love, Dave Collum. You can talk as much as you want, my brother. This is the QTR Podcast. Today's July 23rd, 2019. And this podcast is brought to you by my patrons. That's right, folks. Gotta stroke the old corporate schlong here first before we get started. My patrons are my kind listeners and my kind friends who donate a monthly recurring sum to help keep this podcast in business. And right now, my sole focus is on the podcast, getting good content out there for you. I got good guests coming up. So please, if you're enjoying them, sign up as a patron and donate a small sum. If not, keep listening for free. I don't care. Although if you give me money, I generally just like you better. There's no nice way to say that. This podcast, it's fucking true. Of course it's not true. I love you all. You're all my beautiful children. All right, this podcast is brought to you by my friends over at the Sang Lucci Steam Room, the Sang Lucci Trading Room, Sang Lucci Trading LLC, whatever the fuck you want to call these guys. They are my brothers in the business. I've known them for a long time, 7 or 8 years now. They're some of the sharpest guys in the trading business. Sang and his brother Charlie, my brother Charlie, and my brother Sang, they have a room where they monitor options flow. They offer a master course where they will teach you about how to follow the money. They'll talk about market psychology. And right now, they're working on a brand new thing called the Three Laws of Trading Playbook. It is live right now at 3LTPlaybook.com. It is 100% free, and it's where Lucci breaks down the three organizing principles that have led him to become the seven-figure trader that he is today. And of course, we all know those three principles are coke, booze, and prostitutes. Just joking, Sang, I love you very much. I did just check out his video the other day for the 3LT Playbook. I logged on myself, and it looks fucking awesome. So that is 3LTPlaybook.com. You can check out Sang Lucci's Three Laws of Trading. Look, no joke, folks. 7 or 8 years I've known these guys. They're two of the nicest people that I know, and they definitely know what they're doing. I try not to pitch nonsense or bullshit on this show, which leads me to my second patron, my friends over at thetraderspath.com. The Traders Path is a trading service that was born by a gentleman who was sick and tired of your Jason Bonds, your Tim Sykes, those types of trading rooms where maybe you get the feeling that you're getting front run a little bit. Maybe you're getting the feeling that the trading room is about somebody selling you a service and not actually making you money. Certainly, that's the feeling that I get from watching these stupid fucking Jason Bond advertisements where it's like, hello, I'm sitting in a restaurant. You want me to teach you how to trade? Here's my account on my phone. And check it out. I'm having a steak delivered to me at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's like no one fucking cares. All right. What do you need? You need something practical. You need something you can use. You need something from people that are not going to bullshit you. And so my friend Pete over at the Trader's Path, he went out on his own, said, fuck it. I'm doing my own thing. Link to his service is in my podcast description. You'll get an all-day live stream. You're going to get watch lists on what stocks he's looking at. You're going to get investor advocacy, investor education. So both Sang Lucci and Mr. Pete over at the Trader's Path, you can check them out in the podcast description. Finally, this podcast is brought to you by my friends over at RumorHound. RumorHound is an AI-based piece of software that is going to help you very simply, folks, very easily and in a concise manner, sort through the mergers and acquisitions bullshit that you see on a daily basis. You see it in Twitter rooms, you see it in chat rooms, you see it on whatever feed you're in. There's rumors of M&A all day. So my friends over at Accrete, my friends over at RumorHound.ai, they have produced a piece of software that is going to look at the rumor. It's going to look at the potential financials behind it. It's going to look at all the market factors behind it. It's going to look at the psychology of the deal. It's going to look at the likelihood of whether or not the deal is going to close. And it's going to present to you in a quick and easy fashion what it thinks the credibility of the rumor is. And then from there, you can use that to do whatever the fuck you want. But RumorHound is another great tool just to have in your arsenal of tools if you're going to be ponying up and trying to day trade, trying to hang, as Sang Lucci would say, trying to beat the herd, right? So check out my friends over at RumorHound.ai. Awesome service. They are also in my podcast description. This podcast also brought to you by my friends, my friends over at Hella Bacon. Hella Bacon's a bunch of cowboys down in Texas shooting machine guns out of motherfucking helicopters. That's what's going on over at Hella Bacon. You can check them out. My friends over at Corvus Gold, my friend Piggly Wiggly, and Russ Valenti, my homeboy, is still in the house supporting the podcast. Matt Zimmer on the left coast, I owe you a phone call, brother. I'm sorry I haven't gotten back to you. Just been a little busy over the last couple days. Nick Parks, my buddy Nathan Michaud. Nathan, whatever your name is. My buddy Nate. We're just going to say Nate up at investorsunderground.com. Another no bullshit trading service. Chris Bede, Ken R, Chris Boas. My friend Stank Love just checked in the other day. Some of my newest patrons. Also in addition to Mr. Stank Love. Avi Geller checked in. Oh, Avi, what's going on, my brother? You must have just checked in 7:20. Must have just checked in today. All right, what's going on, Avi? Hobfish, he just checked in literally like 3 minutes ago before I just refreshed this list. So what's up, my friend Avi, Hobfish, Pat Flynn, Matt Loridazin. I appreciate you, brother, even though I just fucked your name up. Brewer, James O'Bearn, what's up, my friend? Dr. Robert Weisberg, nice to have you on board. Robert Weisenfeld, a couple of Irish guys. One, two Roberts right after the other, huh? My friend Carson Rasmussen, Carl Nixon, Jonah Johnson, and Miroslav Stragnovsky. We're going to get started in 1 second, but I got to go back and I got to shout out some of the people that have been down for a while, like Nate Lowell. My friend Wednesday 8 p.m. is in the house. D's Nuts is still here. David Tipton's still here. Johnny Doesn't Know still here. Nick Sutton's still here. Going way back to Matt Merrill, Mr. M3. If you don't know what that means, you better start listening to some podcasts. Jeff Soli, what's up, brother? Nicholas Aiden, Nathan Master, Andre Kahane, Bruce Ludeman, Santo. Let's get fucking started, ladies and gentlemen. I can't read names for the rest of my goddamn life. The two other rules for this podcast are I do require a 2-drink minimum. Just get it done however you want, folks, and you'll be required to sign sworn testimony and have that notarized. Send that into the podcast if you're going to be listening, that you have fulfilled your 2-drink minimum requirement. Finally, I am not a financial advisor, as I'm going to opine on here in a second. I hold no licenses. I hold no registrations. I'm not an RIA. I don't work for AXA Equitable Advisors. I'm not the guy sitting in the Merrill Edge investment section of your local Bank of America branch that I just saw today, earnestly undoing his laptop from his leather portfolio and sitting down to tell people what index funds they should buy. Not fucking me, all right? That's not what I'm doing. Don't take my advice. Do your research elsewhere. Take Tylenol for any headaches, might offer any cramps. Let's get this fucking show started, ladies and gentlemen. This is where I would play the intro music if I had it, but I don't. I've gotten a slew of emails over the last month or two, especially after the Dave Collin podcast I just did on conspiracy theories. I just got a bunch of them, people that had found me through Zero Hedge. Hi, who are you? What are you doing? Why do you curse so much? Why are there 6 minutes of advertisements before the podcast starts? I'm going to sum that one up very simply, folks. If you're going to get 3 hours of content, all right, just let me do fucking 6 minutes or whatever I want at the beginning of the podcast. That's how it's going to go down. As I've said before, I don't like putting ads in the middle of the podcast content, so I'm just not going to do it. I'm going to get them all up front, and you can do whatever you want. Just sit there and deal with it for 6 minutes, and then you can enjoy this beautiful content, which basically today so far has consisted of me continuing to talk about the time that I spent at the beginning of the podcast. And as you can see, this is a self-fulfilling prophecy. Where this just leads to 3 hours of me talking about Patreon, which you just don't want. I don't want it. But, and to be honest with you, this podcast I'm doing today, I didn't really even want to do to begin with, because I kind of felt it was a little, not self-absorbed, but it's not usually something that I like to do. I like to put my content out and say what I got to say, and I like to move forward. I don't like to look back, and I definitely don't like to preach. I don't want to go back and say, well, I said this, I said that, here's how I feel. It's like, look, nobody gives a fuck how I feel, all right? I'm here for a couple of reasons. One is this is therapeutic to me. This is a conversation I would just be having with somebody else. If I wasn't putting it down in a podcast, somebody said to me the other day, oh, you're exactly the same in real life as you're on the podcast. I'm like, I know. I can't imagine people that do these things that go online and then they have to be somebody totally different. Like, I watch these people on YouTube, these, like, YouTube personalities. John and Tina just broke up. And I'm like, who fucking cares? Who are these people? And then you go to their page and it's, like, 62,000 subscribers. You're like, Jesus, fuck. You know, and these two are on camera, okay? And they're crying to YouTube. Folks, this is not how you do a relationship, in my opinion. All right? You don't break up and put a webcam on and just start breaking up with each other and for 60,000 other people to say. I mean, I know that's good reality television. It's the same reason I don't watch reality TV. I'm not interested in The Bachelorette. You're not going to find your deep spiritual connection for the rest of your life through a series of round robin tournaments where one person gets a rose that carries them on to the next round every... How fucking stupid is that? It's like NCAA March Madness. And by the way, here's 30 stupid blondes that we've picked and 50 meathead guys that we picked. And every episode's the same thing. The guys get drunk. They get jealous of each other. One guy tries to prove his dick isn't small. He starts doing push-ups by the pool. You know, one slutty girl comes out and interrupts a date that the guy's on with another girl. Excuse me, can I just borrow you away for a second? Can I just borrow you for a second? It's like, how fucking rude is that? Let them have their date, all right? Here's my advice on dating, which is not what this podcast was supposed to be. But my advice is this. If it's going to work, just let it work. Just be yourself. Just let it work. And if it's not going to work, folks, I got news for you, okay? It's not the end of the fucking world. If Jordan or fucking Devin or Dylan doesn't give you the rose of honor on the TV show, it doesn't mean your lipstick was fucked up. It doesn't mean you wore the wrong color dress. Sometimes shit just doesn't work out, all right? As Dennis Leary would say, life sucks. Get a fucking helmet, all right? Move on. Focus your efforts elsewhere. So I don't really like to play the game where I come on YouTube every time I have a feeling and whatever, as stupid and mundane as it is. Like, I'm not going to come up tomorrow at noon and turn the fucking all the podcast stuff up on and be like, well, you know, I really feel like having a tuna salad hoagie for lunch. And I just thought I would tell everybody that because it's really important. It's like, it's not fucking important, you know. And when you turn on these YouTube stations and you see Jim and Tina have broken up. And then, you know, they split from one YouTube channel and then they both create their others and there's legions of fans and Tim was right and Tina was right. It's like, folks, don't you people have things going on in your lives? I mean, I can't even get 15 minutes out of a day. I have a stack of people in my phone that are literally angry with me, like cursing me out because I haven't called them back. I just don't have time. It just doesn't work. And people are sitting around going like, well, Oh, I can't believe he took her to an Italian restaurant instead of a Mexican restaurant. Oh, I don't know what Jordan was thinking. It's like, listen, Jordan would fucking hate you if he met you, okay? I hate to break the bad news to you. And these guys are not like they are on television all the time, you know? They're not coming into the date every night wearing a suit, you know? Hi, honey, let me get the door for you. It's not like that all the time, trust me. These guys get around their friends. They get about 16 or 17 Coors Light drafts in them. You're going to see the real Jordan. And I got news for you. He's not delivering a bouquet of roses, everything. Oh, your eyes. Let me just tell you, your eyes look so pretty. I can see the whole universe in your eyes. No, he's smashing his fucking beer can on his head. And then he realizes it's not even a can. It's a pint glass because I just said he's drinking drafts. And he's still smashing it on his head. That's what's going on. That's the real Jordan, all right? Look, this is all besides the point. The one point I'm trying to make here is that I don't really play into this like, oh, I'm going to talk about whatever and I'm so fucking important that everybody's going to want to listen to what I have to say about everything. I'm doing this podcast because I got about 15 emails. I can't respond to them all at once. Some people want to know what I'm doing. Some people were ridiculing me for my speech at Benzinga, and that's fine, by the way. I encourage that. Please ridicule me. So the title of this podcast is, why the fuck do I do this? And that's really the question. So I look back to January this year. I wrote this thing on my website, which is quotetheravenresearch.com. You can be the first hit if you'd like to go there. I've got a hit counter. It's a little odometer, an HTML odometer at the bottom, and it's stuck at zero. So maybe you can roll it over to one. I wrote a little piece called Manifesto, and what it says was, one day I was feeling inspired and I wanted to write down exactly why I'm doing this. So first and foremost, why do I do this and what am I doing? That's a great fucking question. Somebody just asked me that the other day, what do you do? And I'm like, what do I do? I don't really know what I do. All right, what I want to do is I want to bring some truth and I want to bring some open discourse to everything, finance mostly, but I realize that I also talk about politics. I realize that I also talk about business. I realize that I also talk about current events. And I think that's really important in this day and age because I think now more so than ever, the media is not trusted, probably for good reason in some cases. And it is, what's the word I'm looking for? It's all the same, it's homogenous, right? Every time you turn on CNBC or you turn on Fox Business News or you turn on CNN or you turn on Fox News, even you turn on MSNBC, with the exception of the polar opposites like MSNBC and Fox News, you're pretty much just getting a variation on a tune, right? Piece of news breaks and Fox News is going to cover it and MSNBC is going to cover it too. If it's breaking worldwide global news, their spin might be a little bit different, but you're getting that piece of news as it has kind of hit the wire, and nobody really is going to stray from the path too much in how they report it or what angles they look at. And so a lot of times, look, there's a very good reason for that, right? Occam's razor says that the news stations, hopefully, if they're doing their job right, are going to be reporting based on what the most pertinent facts are. But sometimes, there are some times, and you know this and I know this, where the lead is buried in a story and nobody in the mainstream kind of wants to unbury it, either because they don't think it's worth unburying, it's against their interest to do so, or they're afraid to. So in cases like those, I think it's really important to kind of have somebody on the outskirts that may look at things a little bit differently. And this doesn't have to be me. I'm not parading myself around as the fucking solution to the media's problems. Trust me. I don't have enough time on my hands and I don't have enough attention span to take care of that. But what I do know is that pretty much on a daily basis, my email inbox and my Twitter DMs right now are being just crushed with people sending me information and angles on things that have hit over the last couple of days that just simply aren't getting enough coverage. And either it's because there's a lack of evidence or it's because it's politically incorrect to look at a story in a certain way. And those are the things that I thrive on. I like those things because 99 times out of 100, they may not be worth mentioning, but one time out of 100, they are going to be worth mentioning. And I think that there's something very healthy about being able to keep an open mind and examine the news really in any way that you want to, from any lens, from any angle that you want to, right? Fox News obviously looks through a conservative lens while they're pushing out the news. And MSNBC obviously looks through a liberal lens while they're pushing out the news, right? But they're still generally always pushing out kind of like the same point. And the same is true in finance, right? In this thing that I wrote, Manifesto, the first thing that I wrote is the mission of QTR is to expose and counterbalance the inherent long bias and sensationally euphoric nature of financial media, right? So it doesn't matter if you're watching Fox Business News, and it doesn't matter if you're watching CNBC, and it doesn't matter if you're really watching Bloomberg, although Bloomberg is probably the one more standard deviation away from quote-unquote normal. But since finance doesn't really have a ton of politics infused in it too much, especially because those three stations kind of just track the stock market. And so there's a unanimous consensus among all political parties that they want the stock market to go up. Democrats want the stock market to go up. Republicans want the stock market to go up. Everybody wants the stock market to go up. So in a case like that, where the mainstream opinion is really homogenous across party lines, and certainly in an instance like that where I feel like a bigger picture is being missed, in this case that we are kind of on this unprecedented monetary policy journey here over the last 20 or 30 years that we have no clue how it's going to end, when a point like that is being missed, that's what I feel is important to talk about. And this isn't like I need to be Mr. fucking make a statement, take action guy. Hey, I'm going to make a podcast and rile up the crowds. I'm not fucking Alex Jones. I had people send me shit. Oh, Chris, you're the next Alex Jones. I'm not the next Alex Jones. All I'm doing is saying what I would normally think, all right? I'm not trying, you know, Alex Jones so clearly sensationalizes sometimes. He comes out and he says things that I know he doesn't believe in, right? And that's the difference here. The difference is the things that I discuss on the podcast are things that I generally find an interest in. I may not believe in them, but I believe it's important to have them open for discussion. And that's why I talk about them. So in the case of the world of finance and something like Fed policy, I'm going to say to you the same thing that I'm going to say when I pull up a stool next to a guy at Ray's Happy Birthday Bar, all right, on Passyunk Ave. I'm going to tell you the exact same thing, which is I don't think the Fed has a fucking clue what they're doing. Now, that's not some statement I'm making to get listeners. I'm not trying to appeal to an Austrian economics whatever. Just like when I talk about Building 7 with Dave Collum, I'm not trying to appeal to conspiracy theorists. I'm just trying to talk about what I talk about and what I would normally talk about. So the idea of exposing and counterbalancing the financial media is really important to me. And this was something, if you didn't watch my Benzinga speech, it's on my YouTube channel, that I talked about when I was at this traders conference in June. Because again, as many of my listeners know, Josh Brown wrote an article, said perma bears are ridiculous people. And I said something to the effect of, Josh, you know what? Perma bears may not be right all day, every day on a short-term basis, but to shut them out as a whole and say that their point of view is not worth listening to is a fool's errand. We're doing ourselves a lot of harm going forward if we can't have some type of civilized discourse to just acknowledge that there is an opinion outside of the mainstream opinion, especially when it comes to monetary policy, right? Because again, over the last 40 years, 30 years with QE, with now NERP and ZERP and permanent low interest rates, we have never done this before. All right, just think about that. We've never done this before. We've never at the same time that we've had a fiat currency had interest rates as low for as long as they are now. We've never targeted 2% inflation with consistency the way that we've been doing it over the last several decades, right? So taking a longer view, we're just a couple of very small steps into what is an unprecedented path going forward that has not been forged yet, at least within the confines of the way things are set up now, right? We're on the planet Earth. The economy exists the way that it does. Geopolitics exists the way that they do. What we're doing right now hasn't been run before. If the world is a simulation, you know, this program that we're all on together here, this hasn't been run yet. So the point that I was trying to make in June and the one I want to make now is to say that people who want to question what's going on are arrogant, I think is one of the most arrogant fucking things you can do in and of yourself. And I concluded with the point during that speech was, there's only one arrogant way to look at the world of finance. And that is that you have the answer figured out and everybody else can go fuck themselves. That's arrogant. Because right now, what I'll tell you is, this is how I feel about things. I feel like we have to ask questions about them. I feel like we're way too out of control when it comes to money printing, when it comes to Fed policy. We've given the keys to people that don't necessarily know how to operate the vehicle. Those are all just my opinions. But what I'll tell you is, I could be wrong. New Keynesian theory and modern monetary theory and all this happy horse shit, these could all be the answers. And we just might not know it yet. But I'm not walking around with the smug kind of arrogance like we've already got it figured out and this is definitely it. So I think it's so important to realize that, you know, I always say about diversification, people say I'm in stocks and I'm in bonds, I'm diversified. It's like, you're in dollar denominated instruments, all right? You're not fucking diversified. And you can take that as far as you want. You could say, well, you got to move things outside of the dollar. And you could say, well, you got to move into things that exist outside of the US. You could say you got to move into things that exist outside of traditional asset classes. You know, then there's all these crazy out in left field things. What if the asteroid hits the Earth and it's got, you know, $3 trillion worth of gold on it? I mean, look, all these things are possible. So yeah, it's okay to talk about these things, and it's okay to, it's like, this is going to be an obscure analogy, right? But if you watch the Joe Rogan podcast, every once in a while, Graham Hancock and Randall Carlson will come on and they'll talk about, you know, cataclysm theory, and they'll talk about the potential of, you know, some type of giant meteor hitting the Earth and whether or not that occurred tens of thousands of years ago and shifted history as we know it, and the possibility with the Earth kind of drifting through this torrid meteor stream that the Earth could eventually one day get hit by something that could fuck us all up. We're not talking about a little, hey, point to the sky. Oh, isn't that nice, a shooting star? We're talking about, pack your things, folks. The fucking big show is over. Now, is it likely that over the, you know, hundreds of millions and billions of years, this giant time track, the way that we look at it, that this thing is going to happen tomorrow? No, it's not likely tomorrow. Is it likely it'll happen this week, this month, this year, this decade, this century? Probably not. Is it worth bringing up? Of course it's worth bringing up. You know, right now in a room, Hancock says there's, I forget what they're called, but they're called like the Comet Research Group or something. You know, you got six guys out in a room somewhere just trying to talk about, hey, what could happen if something heads our way? If an asteroid starts heading our way and we can't do anything to stop it. To me, I don't know about you, but I like having those guys thinking about that thing. All right? We may be completely fucked if it does happen, but at least there's six people we're going to be able to point to and be like, so, what have you guys come up with, you know? You open the room to the meeting room there. It's just a bunch of empty beer cans and pizza boxes. Like, shit, I thought you guys were in here researching something. And all these skeptics and debunkers, many of whom I agree with on a litany of things. I consider myself a skeptic myself. Get all, you know, pissed off. Why are you pushing these theories? Why are you pushing these theories? It's not likely this will happen, you know? Yeah, it's not likely. It's not likely that the stock market is going to fucking drop 10,000 points tomorrow because of an algorithmic high-frequency trading error. But is it impossible? Fuck no. And has something like that, not 10,000 points, but have we seen drops in the past that have occurred like that? Fuck yeah, we have. So is it worth talking about? Of course it's worth talking about. Do bubbles burst? Yes, we know that they burst. Small bubbles burst? Okay, like when we have a credit cycle that just kind of gives away, and all of a sudden, all right, well, you got a bunch of defaults and delinquencies now, and you deal with that and whatever. Somewhat bigger bubbles burst, like 2008 when the whole housing market goes tits up. Ah, little bit bigger of a problem. And really big bubbles burst. Maybe ones that are so big we haven't seen yet. And maybe ones that would have taken 1,000 years from a traditional economic perspective to burst that we've just thrown into fucking hyperdrive with QE. We don't know. So it might happen in your lifetime. It might not happen in your lifetime. But don't you want to be able to talk about it? Don't you want to be able to just get it out there? Doesn't it feel nice to just get all the cards on the table? You know, it's not likely that the Yankees are going to put up 20 runs tonight. But when you log on to your bookmaker online, they give you the option and they give you the odds for it, right? They're going to pay you plus 40,000 on the Yankees scoring 20 tonight. And you never bet it, but it's nice seeing it there. 20 plus, that covers everything. 20, 21, 22, all the way up to a trillion. And then pass that to infinity. I'll take that whole field of numbers, suckers. It'll pay me 40,000 to one. Or I think that plus 40,000 would actually be 400 to 1. You know, whatever. I like to know it's there, okay? The odds of the whole thing going tits up tomorrow are small. Would it surprise me? No. Would it surprise a lot of other people? Fuck right it would, okay? Fuck right it would. So, maybe by encouraging some discourse, some dialogue, some outside-the-box thinking, and maybe just asking for some humility and asking for the people in charge to just take a step back and say, maybe we don't really have it all figured out. I beat this dead horse all the time on this podcast, but 2008, we didn't have it figured out. Bernanke said subprimes contained. Guys were on CNBC, Fox Business News, day after day after day. Everything's fine. We're going to have a nice little pullback. Go out, buy a house, go shopping. It's like, no, you guys got it wrong. And that's what I said during my Benzinga speech. So to continue assuming that these guys are always going to have it right is a fool's errand. And the fucked up thing is that all the media sources, but for, you know, like Grant's Interest Rate Observer, who does a great job, and a couple other, you know, kind of Austrian-leaning guys that are out there. But pretty much 97% of the financial media world exists under this umbrella that fiscal policy as we do it now and monetary policy as we do it now are normal and they're okay. And maybe they are, but it doesn't make fucking sense to me. Which is why I'm here. why I'm trying to just whittle away and just open this door and let a little bit of sunlight in here to kind of give people a little bit more of an understanding as to how the whole system operates, right? You can't start to question this stuff if you don't really understand it. You can't really start to get the perspective that you need on this until you wrap your head around how monetary policy and fiscal policy in this country work. Today, they put through a deal, or they proposed a deal, to raise the debt ceiling for 2 more years. We're going to raise the debt ceiling for 2 more years. Raising the debt ceiling has become standard practice, okay? This is akin to, you're at home, you have 3 credit cards, right? They each have a $5,000 limit, and you have no real money in the bank, but you've got an income stream of $250 a month that comes in. And even after you max out, you have credit limits set at $5,000, $5,000, and $5,000 because your creditors know that $15,000, if you get into that hole on your $250 a month income stream, it's going to take you probably 50 years to get out of it, but you might still be able to get out of that $15,000 in debt. So we're going to cap you at $15,000 between the 3 cards, and we're going to hope you don't stretch yourself too thin. And that's the most that we're willing to extend to you. And if your income kind of stays the same or rises nominally, but you keep going back and asking for credit line increases on these cards, now I'm going to move all 3 to $7,500 each. Let's make it $22,500 now I'm in the hole. Now let's move all 3 to $10,000 each. Okay, I got to keep spending. You got to spend money to make money. Got to keep things healthy. Got to give the impression that my personal economy is healthy. And you just kept going back and just raising the limit on those credit cards over and over and over and over and over again. All a credit limit is a debt ceiling for your credit card. So what do we do when we are perpetually raising the debt ceiling? Well, we're operating from a position of a deficit, which means that we are spending more than we're taking in the United States. So every year that that happens, we're cash flow negative. You know, if you're a company, you were not profitable, right? So we're not tacking money into the bank accounts and shoring up the balance sheet. We're adding more to this debt pile. Now just think about it. In the news, it's common to talk about the debt ceiling. Everybody says you can read 50 articles today about the debt ceiling where people are talking about raising it, but nobody stops and asks, why? Why do we have so much debt? Why are we raising the debt ceiling? What's the point? What was the debt ceiling created for in the first place? Surely it wasn't created to prevent exactly what the fuck is happening right now. After all, it's called a ceiling. So the mainstream media is not going to give you that, but I want to give you that. I want you to think about, what does it mean every time we raise the debt ceiling? What does it mean for our position as a country in terms of our balance sheet? What we need to be doing is, and this is a very simple, the problem is with finance is humans have come in and constructed this system that benefits them, at least for the time being. It benefits the rich, it benefits the politicians, it creates inequality, which then, you know, ironically gets blamed on many of the people who advocate for the policy to stop this. But regardless, this system creates more problems than it solves, because we've just built all the, it's like, you know, we had a nice little house, right? Econ 101, supply and demand. We want to be creditors. We don't want to be debtors. We want to have money saved up for capital investment in the future. We don't want to owe other people. All these simple things, right? Stuff that anybody can, if you ran a business, you would want money in that business's bank account. You want to bring in a steady stream of cash every month. You would want the money you bring in to eclipse your expenses so that you could turn a profit. And then ostensibly, you would want to take that money that you make, pay some of it to yourself, and put some of it in your little cupcake shop's bank account so that when it comes time to upgrade, when it comes time to move to better quarters, when it comes time to advertise, you have capital that you can deploy. That's a very simple example. Why aren't we running the country like that? Trump used to say when he was running, "We want to run the country like a business." Of course, that's not what he's doing now. But why wouldn't we want to run the country like that? Nobody makes those very simple points. The country, if it was a business, is losing money. Our costs exceed what we're bringing in, and so we're just racking up debt. And that's it. And then pretty soon, you rack up so much debt in your country or in your restaurant that you got a big problem. And if you don't have John Taffer to come by and scream at you like on Bar Rescue, you're fucked. You go out of business. You go bankrupt. Of course, Taffer loves to burst in through the doors. "You guys are running the state into the ground!" I hate him. The fucked up thing is, like, as a former, you know, restaurant and food and beverage aficionado myself, I understand what Taffer's doing when he goes into these places, right? It's simple stuff, simple menus, portion control, fresh food, just making things look nicer, training the staff the right way. I'm in for that. I just hate the drama of it. It's so unnecessary. It's like the reality TV shows. I guess it's got to make good TV, right? If the fucking meathead starts doing push-ups next to the pool, I'm like, what a fucking douchebag. And then there's like a bunch of women at home like, wow, look at his muscles. Or when the slutty girl comes out and interrupts the date with the guy. "Excuse me, can I just borrow you for a second? I just want to go on a walk." Guys are like, wow, she's hot. I wish she would interrupt me. I'm like, I was just in the middle of a fucking sentence. This is not your date time. Go inside. Your date time will be when the NBC producers tell you. So I like Taffer in terms of what he brings in terms of restaurant acumen, but I don't like the drama of it, okay? You can make the point that you need to cook a salmon fillet properly without throwing a plate across the room, all right? There's nothing about throwing a plate across a kitchen that says to me, your salmon was slightly undercooked. It says, I have a neurological disorder and unfortunately, this is what gets me ratings, and that's unfortunate because the entire country enjoys it, and that's a whole other conversation in and of itself because we're losing our fucking minds. But when Taffer doesn't burst in on the U.S. government, you guys are in so much debt! When he doesn't do that, then what happens? What gives? Does the world lose confidence in the United States of America? Does the dollar no longer become the reserve currency? If we think we can just keep forging forward on the path that we're on now without rhyme, reason, or consequence, yes, ladies and gentlemen, these fucks are cutting interest rates with the stock market at all-time highs. If we think we're doing the right thing now, all right, maybe I'm wrong, but it sure seems a little crazy. Sure seems at odds of what we were told when the original QE happened. Hey, we're just going to do this once. We're just going to step in and throw a little bit of money in here, solve this one problem. That'll be it. We'll be out. No problem. 30 years later, here we are, still on the same crack binge, just fucking mainlining money, mainlining QE at 50 times the dosage we were 20 years ago. Just shoot it in my veins. We know the market's at all-time highs. We just got to ram it up higher. What do you mean? We're doing fine. Everybody's 401k is doing very well, right? Doesn't matter. We need more QE. At some point, the confidence in the Fed will end. At some point, the confidence in monetary policy will end. At some point, confidence in our fiscal policy will end. And everybody's going to turn around and go, how come nobody in the fucking media mentioned this? How come nobody said this when Jordan was at the pool doing push-ups? That's why I'm here, for fuck's sake. That's why I'm here. Maybe nobody will even notice. Maybe Max Mulvihill will point out, hey, excuse me, one guy said this one time on one thing. So in terms of finance, that's why the fuck I'm here. I want to get that viewpoint out there. I want to just make sure. I don't want to tell people what to think. I really don't. I'm a libertarian. I want you to be happy. I want you to feel however you feel and do whatever you want to do. But I want it to have been represented out there. It's like the podcast. People tell me, oh, do you advertise? Do you tell people about it? No, I tell people not to listen. I really do. People are like, oh, you do a podcast? I'm like, yeah, don't listen to it. Why? Because I don't try to force my shit on anybody. I feel like you have to be deluded and self-absorbed to go out there, tell everybody about your podcast. Oh, you should listen. You should listen to what I have to say. Look, I got followers on Twitter, okay? They're called followers. They choose to opt in. I don't force anybody to follow me, and I don't force anybody to listen. Folks, I'm just going to leave this shit here. That's a great way to describe my podcast and all my content. Folks, I'm just going to leave this shit here. Discuss it amongst yourselves. Listen to it if you want. Don't listen to it if you don't want it. Rate it 5 stars if you like it. Rate it 0 stars if you hate it. I don't care. I just need it to be out there. I need it to be off my head. I need it to be in wherever, the digital world somewhere. It's just going out there. I don't know where it's going. I put a file on a thing and then I just send it out there. There's a number on the screen that tells me people are listening to it. And I guess people are. I also wrote in my manifesto, my mission is to raise critical questions about economic theory and monetary policy being used to micromanage our nation's economy. We covered that. Introduce and advocate for the idea of sound money and conservative fiscal policy. That means spending less than we're taking in, and it means money that is backed by something, okay, and not money that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is like, oh my God, we can just print trillions of these. Oh, we just push the button on. We just add another zero to the zero on the $100 bill, and we make a $1,000 bill. Like there's no consequences to that, right? Work to pull the curtain back on how the world of finance operates behind the scene so that the everyday citizen understands. This is another big one. I always say on this podcast, if my friends that I fucking train with at the gym, my buddy who lives next door to me that's a welder, my friend who, you know, lives in fucking North Philly who's a bartender, if these guys understood, if they took the time, and it's not their fault that they don't understand, it's not, most of them have the brain power, it's just, you know, life gets in the way. They're working, they're busy, they're on the grind, they got families, they got all kinds of shit going on. But if they stopped and they, you know, took a year to figure it out, figure out the capital markets, figure out the debt markets, figure out the way that things operate, figure out the way government spending works. Look at the details. I mean, these people would riot, and I always say that. So what I like to do is I like to try to distill those things down to key points and then deliver them in a whiskey-fueled rant like I'm doing right now. Why? Not because I think that's the most effective way to do it, because it's the most comfortable way for me to do it. And a lot of this show, how do you pick your guests, Chris? I don't know. I just talk to people I would want to talk to. I would love to talk to Jeff Mackey. That's why I invited him on the podcast. So he comes on, we talk. I got Carson Block coming on in a couple of days. I like Carson. Carson's a guy, I see him out at the bar or something. I go up to Carson, I talk to him. I enjoy speaking to him. You know? Somebody like Steve Leisman, Charles Payne, they're not even getting an invite. It's nothing personal. I'm sure you guys are nice guys. I just don't want to talk to you. I feel like I know where you're coming from. You're not interesting to me. So I talk to people that are interesting, or I invite people on that are interesting, and people can come on or they can refuse. People have refused. Many people have refused. That's all right. And if it gets to the point where there's no guests, then I'll just come on here and scream and rant on my own. That's what's so great about this thing. It's self-sustaining. I also wrote in my manifesto, I want to provide my unfiltered opinion on current events, speaking honestly and truthfully, as if we're sitting in a bar in South Philadelphia. Well, that's an easy one for me because I got a lot of fucking experience doing it. So I do want to provide my opinion on current events. I did a podcast about Howard Schultz and how he was being demonized when he announced that he was going to run for president. Now he has kind of gone away. But I had things that I wanted to say about that. Just like I had things when I was talking to Colm about conspiracy theories that I wanted to talk about. I got opinions on a lot of things, not just finance. I realize some people tune in for the financial content, but you know what? It's my fucking show, so I'm going to talk about whatever I want. I'm sorry. Look, I'm putting out a product. It's not even a product. You don't have to pay for it. And if you don't want to listen to it, you don't have to. And that's what's so cool about podcasts. Or you can make it here to the 44-minute mark and say, I've had enough, and just turn it off. It's on demand. And then if you don't get sick of me after a while, you can just turn me right back on at the 44-minute mark. And I'm still here. Still screaming, still ranting, still yelling. You know, I enjoyed that last podcast with Colm so much because we dove into so many conspiracy theories that I had looked into personally on my own. And I love talking about things like that. I don't want to limit the podcast to just finance, right? It's cool to kind of find out that we had differences of opinions on things and that we thought similarly on things. I'm trying to get Richard Gage on the podcast too because I really want to go deep with him on 9/11. I mean, Colm went there on 9/11 when he was talking about the physics of the buildings falling down. He was, building 7 was always the key for me, right? 7 was always it. Those tiny ass fires and that building comes down the way that it does, and most people still don't know that a third building fell on 9/11. This is what I mean about covering an angle of a story that should be getting huge fanfare but doesn't. It's not just, hey, we're driving the economy into a fucking brick wall at 260 miles an hour. It's, hey, did you know a third building fell on 9/11? Am I saying George Bush did it? No, I'm not saying George Bush did it. All I'm saying is, did you know a third building fell? To me, I feel like that's an important piece of information that I would want to know about. The fact that there's something like 5,000 cameras around the Pentagon and we can't find one frame of video of this plane crashing into the Pentagon, does it mean that the crash didn't happen? No, that's not what it means. I was watching another video this morning about it, and I can see the case for a plane hitting the Pentagon. I really can. But is it worth noting? Yeah, I think it's worth noting. Is it something that we shouldn't ask questions about? Fuck no. We should always ask questions, right? It's like the issue of free speech. If you're going to be for the First Amendment, then you got to support the rights of people to say things that you don't agree with. It's painful, and you got to put your ego aside and your emotions aside, which I know is so fucking difficult for this millennial generation and for the snowflakes. We can't allow hate speech. I got news for you. We can. It's not pretty, but it all falls under free speech. And I hate to make you uncomfortable, but like Jordan Peterson says, discomfort is a part of life. You're either for free speech or you're not. You're either for being able to ask questions, especially of your government, or you're not. That's what liberty is, right? I think it was John Adams said, "You'll never know what it cost my generation to preserve your freedom. So make good use of it," or something like that. And it's a John Adams quote that I loved. You know, there's nothing wrong with asking questions. There's nothing wrong with trying to examine topics from the outside looking in or from a different angle. Or really personally in a selfish kind of way, whatever angle I deem fit, whatever's the most interesting to me. And you know what? There's people that listen to me that send me shit, say, "Hey, I love your stuff on finance, but I disagree with you on Building 7. I love your stuff on politics, but I can't stand listening to you on finance." Take what you like and leave the rest. I don't care. I'm not trying to be everything for everybody. Let's agree on stuff. Let's disagree on stuff. I love it. I really do. You're on the way left. You're on the way right. You're a liberal. You're a conservative. You're a spender. You're a saver. You're a conspiracy theorist. You're a skeptic. I love you. And you're anywhere in between. You're cool. I'm all right with you. You know, it's like I used to have this old Woodstock 94 CD that was a live recording of the Woodstock concert that they did in Saugerties, New York. It was fucking awesome. Had like Jackal and Green Day and Metallica on it and like Primus. And in between the songs, there were these little interludes, and the interludes were points during Woodstock when people would come on the microphone and they would make announcements to the crowd. Because, you know, you had 50,000 drunk, stoned, hallucinating hippies out in the middle of this mud field in Saugerties, New York somewhere, and every once in a while they would have to herd the crowd together to make an announcement, like, "There's lightning coming, you're all gonna die," was one of them. And at one point, this guy's making an announcement, and he's like, and even the guy making the announcement sounds a little stoned. He's like, excuse me, just want to let you guys know there's some lightning coming through, okay? So stay away from those big metal tables back there, those big metal fuckers, he says. And he goes, after that, he says, put your flags down, you know. We support whatever they're for. I always love that line. I'm like, yeah, I support whatever flag you're waving, you know. I support your right to wave it. I do. But let's have civil discourse about it. And let's talk about it. And that's cool. You know, I have on my patron page this quote from Joe Rogan, who, you know, I kind of feel stupid going on and on about Joe Rogan on the podcast. I don't know. I mean, I know he's so immensely popular, but his podcast really like one of the things that inspired me to get into podcasting and to do the long form thing, because you could listen to guys on his podcast be real. And you say like, wow, this is cool. You don't need a commercial interruption. You just tap into this fucking dude's brain and just let him go for 3 hours or an hour if he wants to talk for an hour or whatever. And you can be open-minded. His style very much reminds me of Louis Theroux, why I like the BBC documentarian Louis Theroux, because he builds a rapport with people. He asks probing, polite questions. He's a little self-deprecating, you know, and he's very open-minded. And I think that's the best possible way to be with guests. That's how you're going to get the most out of them. But I have this quote on my Patreon page. Most of you haven't seen it. Get it? Little Patreon joke. And it just says, you don't have to be number one. You just have to be something for somebody. And that's a quote from Joe Rogan about his podcast. When I read that, I was like, fuck, that's what I need to do. Just need to be something for somebody. And if not, that somebody is myself. I'll just come here and say what I gotta say and that's it. I love getting the positive feedback from you guys. I love getting the people that tell me, I don't know what the fuck you do. Hey, you know what? I don't know what the fuck I do either. Right now it's 7:19 and the Phillies game starting. So I'm going to call it a night. But again, I'm not trying to be number one. I just want to be something for somebody. I just want to represent an angle and a viewpoint and just get it out there. And that, folks, is why the fuck I'm here. All right? Peace.